The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Didn't work yesterday. Let's try it today. See if our luck is any better.
It's called the Green New Deal. Nothing like you will read online, darling. So let me do the reveal. Let him do the reveal. It's zero emissions by 2030. The Green New Deal is coming to you. I guarantee. Hey, you know it's true. Better wages. Oh, goes on for you. And education. The old school, it'll be our something new.
It ain't a partisan issue. 80% agree.
80% agree.
Congress needs a little hey, baby. That is up to you and me.
Hey, you and me.
Clean up the environment.
Clean up the elections.
It's the future. I'm talking to you. You know you want it.
Hey, you know it's true.
Deterioration.
Oh, ain't good for you.
The greenhouse gases.
Hey,
I've gotta go. You got the time now.
Take it slow.
You can see the warnings everywhere around you. We're kicking out the old school.
We are something new.
There's a beer, something new.
It's social justice we're after, not insulating opulence. That's gone on way too long, baby. We must change all that at once.
We must change all that at once.
And you're the greatest resource we got, it is true.
You're the future. I'm talking to you.
You know you want it.
Hey, you know it's true.
Uh-huh.
The Green New Deal.
Oh,
it's moving you.
Uh-huh.
We don't want war. Or corporate welfare.
We got solutions.
Let's get them in there.
Got to implement this. Got to push it through.
That's the Green New Deal. And it's what we're gonna do.
Kicking out the old school.
This'll be our something new.
This'll be our something new.
This'll be our something new.
Yeah. That is the Parody Project. Hold on. All right. We got it. No feedback. The Parody Project. This will be our something new. I tried to play that yesterday, and that's when my audio and everything started freaking out on me. It was the Peter Principle, right? Or the Murphy Principle, or whatever it is. When anything can go wrong, will go wrong. That's what we had yesterday. Anyway, so that video, again, from the Parody Project. It's at, they're at, I want to make sure, parodyproject.com. And, you know, I guess, it was touting the Green New Deal. So a cool kind of song. But the video is really something to watch, because it's this... I hate to call him an old guy, but it's an older looking gentleman who's all dressed up and doing this funky little dance. It's it'll put a smile on your face. So I will also post the video of that on my blog today at NicoleSandler.com, because God knows we could all use a little bit of a smile every now and then, especially after yesterday. I gotta, first of all, thank you for the wonderful feedback after yesterday's show. It's nice to know I'm not alone. And I know I'm not alone. I know millions of people suffer from depression, and especially today with all that's going on in the world, it's Murphy's Law. Thank you. It's some days are really, really difficult. I've been dealing with this for a few weeks, as I told you yesterday. So thank you for the wonderful feedback I got. I really appreciate the kind words. I've been dealing with this bout of this depression for a few weeks now that just, I can't seem to shake, and I'm not going to get into it again today. I almost didn't make today's show because, frankly, I had a bit of a panic attack about an hour ago. I didn't watch Donald Trump. I guess there was a press spray thing in the Oval Office where he made some asinine statements like, this.
But we're building a lot of wall right now as we speak, and we're renovating a lot of wall, and we're getting ready to give out some very big contracts with money that we have on hand and money that
no,
comes
you're
in.
Not. You cannot spend a dime without Congress first appropriating it. He's like, oh, we have got money lying around. No, you don't. It doesn't work that way, you fucking moron. I've decided I'm going to keep that clip handy instead of getting all apoplectic and going off on Trump. I will try to say fuck you to him in a more upbeat manner. I had stuff to talk to you about. You can't explain the reasons for depression or for the panic attack that I had a little earlier this afternoon. It just happens. There's no logical explanation. But last night, it's so funny. Somebody sent me this video. I'd already seen it. Ellen Page, the actress, was on Late Night with Stephen Colbert. It is late night, right? Yeah. And she spoke of the nastiness. Now, I've been bemoaning the nastiness in politics. Again, today, Cory Booker announced, and I'm not the biggest Cory Booker fan, but I'm not going to go around saying, never Booker! It's a little early. How about we hear them all first? Anyway, Ellen Page went on with Stephen Colbert, and she sounded off on the ugliness in our just general discourse these days. And I lay it all on the feet of Donald Trump. And here's my, my theory. Instead of that search for a kinder, gentler nation, which we used to be looking for, we are a mean, rude, ugly society. And I think it's because we're all stressed out. And I think it's because the guy in the Oval Office, the resident, instead of calling him president, we should just call him resident, is such a miserable, horrible, sad excuse for a human being. And his vice president, oh my God, in many ways, is even worse because Mike Pence believes this shit. He is an ideologue. Donald Trump is just a moron. He's just a certifiable imbecile with narcissistic personality disorder. That's me with my firsthand knowledge of psychiatric maladies. Anyway, Ellen Page is on with Colbert, and usually they try to, on these late night talk shows, they try to keep things light, you know, an upbeat. Let me play for you what Ellen Page said last night. So somebody sent this video to me and said, this should make you feel better today. really?
I'm like really fired up tonight.
This is how you have to be fired up.
It feels impossible to not feel this way right now with the president and the vice president, Mike Pence, who like wishes I couldn't be married. Let's just be clear. The vice president of America wishes I didn't have the love with my wife. He wanted to ban that in Indiana. He believes in conversion therapy. He has hurt LGBTQ people so badly as the government of Indiana, and I think the thing we need to know, and I hope my show Gaycation did this, in terms of connecting the dots, in terms of what happened the other day to Jussie, I don't know him personally, I sent all of my love. Connect the dots. This is what happens. If you are in a position of power and you hate people and you want to cause suffering to them,
yep,
you go through the trouble. You spend your career trying to cause suffering. What do you think is going to happen? Kids are going to be abused and they're going to kill themselves. And people are going to be beaten on the street. I have traveled the world and I have met the most marginalized people you could meet. I am lucky to have this time and the privilege to say this. This needs to stop.
This needs to fucking stop. We are, the country is being led, figuratively speaking, by hateful, racist, bigots, misogynists, religious fanatics who have a really warped vision of what God is. Take that from an atheist. We are at in a really, really ugly show. So that was the clip that listener Tamara sent me with the comment, I hope this makes you smile today. Now, I don't know that smile is the word, but right, I'm right there with you, Ellen Page. The ugliness has got to stop. And I know, look, when I get depressed, I get, you know, a part of me lashes out. I get angry. And I say things that I later regret. But that's not what's happening here. And then to expand on that, yesterday, Donald Trump gave an interview to the New York Times. And it was frightening. I mean, it's like we're living in an episode of The Twilight Zone. By the way, happy 65th birthday to my old friend Bill Mumy today. Yes, the little boy who wished people to the cornfield and spoke to his late grandmother on that toy phone. Little Bill Mumy, Danger Will Robinson, is 65 years old today. Just saying. We're all getting up there. But I digress. I feel like we're living in an episode of The Twilight Zone. The normalization of Donald Trump is what's going on. In fact, oh God, did I not save that? Oh, I thought I had a write up from Greg Sargent at the Washington Post, who wrote about it. By giving Donald Trump this audience and doing an interview with him. In fact, I've got some of it in What's New, so we'll get to it in a moment. I don't want to, you know, assault your eardrums by playing more Donald Trump audio than is absolutely necessary. And really, at this point, anything is more than is absolutely necessary. But he is the resident, so what can I say? It just... that the stuff that he's saying is so antithetical to common sense. We are living in opposite world. And I know, and I said, we're living in a Twilight Zone episode. It is opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
All right. And since so much of what I want to talk about now is included in What's News, we'll do it. And hey, it's Friday. So what the fuck?
We'll do it live. Okay. Fucking thing. No. We'll do it live. Fuck it. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, the government shutdown may be over for now. But the fight over a border wall is at a standstill.
In an ice-cold Capitol, frozen positions from the president and House Speaker.
If there's no wall, it doesn't work. And if they don't have a wall, I don't even want to waste my time reading what they have.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi is clear.
There's not going to be any wall money in the legislation.
Democrats today released their starting point in bipartisan negotiations to avoid a second shutdown, providing more money than the White House requested for Customs and Border Protection, for the Coast Guard, and for Secret Service, less money than requested for ICE, and no money for a wall. Still, this may come down to semantics. When is a wall, and when is it a fence or barrier?
The wall, the barrier, whatever you want to call it, they can name it peaches.
That's not what the president tweeted this morning. Let's just
yesterday
call them
morning.
Walls from now on and
4 o'clock in the morning,
games,
by the way,
he said. But both sides do seem open to more fencing.
If the president wants to call that a wall, they can call it a wall.
A sliver of space for compromise in a negotiation where words about walls matter. Hallie Jackson, NBC News.
Okay, so in a new interview that I was telling you about with the New York Times yesterday, Donald Trump admitted that he won't be satisfied with any deal this bipartisan group of 17 lawmakers now negotiating agree on, calling the exercise a, quote, waste of time, saying he'll likely go ahead and declare a national emergency and use his executive power to build his stupid wall anyway.
I think Nancy Pelosi is hurting our country very badly by doing what she's doing. And ultimately, I think I've set the table very nicely. I think people understand. Well, they understand, Peter. They didn't know what was going on at the southern border. Now they know. They had no idea the amount of crime, the amount of drugs, the amount of human trafficking, which can be stopped with a proper system.
You set the table for an emergency declaration.
I've set the table. I've set the stage for doing what I'm going to do.
Asshole.
Are you going to wait out the 21 days before you take it?
Yeah, I'm going to wait till the 15th. I think it's a waste of time.
He'll wait till the 15th to declare a national emergency. He thinks it's a waste of time, but he'll wait 2 more weeks to declare a national emergency. If it's either an emergency or it isn't. Isn't that right, Congressman Adam Schiff?
The fact that none of the intel chiefs brought up a threat at the southern border as being one of the most pressing threats facing the country, that could be exhibit A in a challenge to any kind of a declaration of a national emergency. The fact that none of our intelligence agencies think it's an emergency, the fact that Congress on both parties don't think this is an emergency, I think if anything is going to undermine that legal case that the president may try to make, that hearing yesterday could be a central exhibit.
So the president or the resident of the United States admits to the paper of record that he'll circumvent Congress if their negotiations don't come up with his ransom demands, $5.7 billion for a border wall. Not only is Trump threatening to disregard the authority of a co-equal branch of government, he's also undermining the entire intelligence community. So you remember that on Tuesday, it was DNI Dan Coats, CIA Director Gina Haspel, FBI Director Christopher Wray, and other senior intelligence officials. They delivered a 42-page report and testified before the Senate hearing on the most urgent global threats facing the U.S. Their testimony contradicted many of Trump's ridiculous opinions related to national security. Here's just a couple of them. They're quick, I promise.
ISIS is intent on resurging and still commands thousands of fighters in Iraq and Syria.
We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly.
We currently assess that North Korea will seek to retain its WMD capabilities and is unlikely to completely give up its nuclear weapons and production capabilities.
Nuclear.
And the big thing is it will be a total denuclearization, which is already starting taking place. They can start immediately.
Okay, so you get the idea. Trump lashed out at the intelligence chiefs on Twitter, calling their assessments wrong and suggesting that intelligence should go back to school.
I love the poorly educated.
Yeah, well, yesterday afternoon, Trump claimed that there was no disagreement. Instead, he said that their testimony was mischaracterized by the media. He even claimed that the intelligence officials had called it fake news.
Mr. President, did you talk to your intelligence chiefs today about the displeasure you had with their testimony?
I did, and they said that they were totally misquoted and they were totally, it was taken out of context. So what I...
Asshole.
Again, the hearing before the Senate Intelligence Committee was public. It was carried on multiple TV networks. Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, speaking on behalf of the other five witnesses, submitted 42 pages of written testimony on a wide range of security threats. The video of the hearing was posted on the committee's website. It's there for everyone to see, yet this fucking moron insists on gaslighting America. Oh, no, we're on the same page. They didn't contradict me. They were misquoted. It's fake news. Yeah. But back to the wall for a moment. One of Trump's claims in favor of a wall is that drugs are pouring through openings along the southern border. The fact is that most of the drugs are being brought in through legal ports of entry. For example,
Customs and Border Protection says its officers found 254 pounds of fentanyl, more than twice the previous record seizure and worth $3.5 million. It was discovered in a truck trying to come from Mexico through the border checkpoint in Nogales, Arizona. When it drove through an X-ray scanner, officers noted something unusual about the floor of the cargo area. A drug-sniffing dog alerted to a spot in the truck that was loaded with cucumbers.
CBP officers discovered a non-factory compartment built under the trailer's floor, revealing numerous packages.
They also found nearly 400 pounds of methamphetamine. Fentanyl, a synthetic opioid, is up to 100 times more powerful than heroin, blamed for more than 28,000 overdose deaths in the U.S. in 2017. Despite President Trump's claims of smuggling all along the border, federal agents say most of the drugs come from Mexico through the checkpoints. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who, by the way, hates his job and he's probably going to run for the U.S. Senate from Kansas, just saying, he announced this morning, I hope you're sitting down for this, that the United States is formally withdrawing from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Agreement with Russia. The pact, signed in 1987, has kept the development of nuclear missiles in check since the days of the Cold War. What could possibly go wrong? Our buddy, in spirit anyway, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, made her debut yesterday questioning witnesses at a House Oversight Committee hearing on the rising prices of pharmaceuticals. Yeah, something we all know well around here. In case you were wondering how she did, she was pretty fucking awesome.
Would it be correct, Dr. Kesselheim, to characterize the NIH money that is being used in development and research as an early investment?
Yes.
So the public is acting as an early investor in the production of these in the production of these drugs. Is the public receiving any sort of direct return on that investment from the highly profitable drugs that are developed from that research?
No, in most cases, there is when those products are eventually handed off to a for-profit company, there aren't licensing deals that bring money back into the coffers of the NIH. That usually doesn't happen.
So the public is acting as early investor, putting tons of money in the development of drugs that then become privatized, and then they receive no return on the investment that they have made.
Right.
Nice, huh? But she did a great job there. Get that stuff out. Cory Booker threw his hat in the ring today, so he's running, in case you didn't know. And finally, the polar vortex seems to be on its way out, and not a second too soon.
In Michigan, the town of Hell froze over.
Hell has frozen over.
The governor asking residents to conserve energy after an equipment failure, trying to ensure everyone can get at least some heat.
In the Midwest and Northeast, they broke more than 100 records for cold temperatures, and it's still brutal out here today. But relief is on the way for cities like Chicago. Yesterday, it felt like negative 52 here. By Sunday, it'll feel 95 degrees warmer.
Oh, boy. So relief is on the way. I guess there's a big football game in Atlanta on Sunday. I got to share this with you. So that's happening. I'm not a football fan. I usually look forward to things like the State of the Union address. I sort of have a breakdown. The reason I mentioned the Super Bowl, I think this ad is going to run during the Super Bowl. I'm a bit foggy on the details here, as you can tell, because I just realized that I'm screwing up. They don't run commercials during the State of the Union address. Stacey Abrams, who should be the governor of Georgia right now, and probably if it were not for voter suppression efforts on behalf of the former Secretary of State, who's now the Republican governor, she would be governor. Anyway, the Democrats tapped her to deliver the response to, the Democratic response to the State of the Union address. Well, she cut an ad that I'm going to play for you in just a moment that I believe is going to run during the Super Bowl, at least in Georgia, where the Super Bowl is taking place. All right. Take it away, Stacey Abrams. Keep my fingers crossed that this works. Here we go.
Smile.
I'm Republican Natalie Crawford, County Commissioner in North Georgia.
And I'm Democrat Stacey Abrams from Atlanta.
We don't agree on everything.
But we love Georgia.
And want fair elections.
Every vote should be counted from every corner of our state.
We need hand-marked paper ballots and our election officials to have the support they need.
Join us in the fight for election reform. Take a selfie and share your support.
Use hashtag Fair Elections Now.
Because picturing fair elections is something we can all do.
Yeah. Wow. So there's that. I expect great things out of Stacey Abrams, who, by the way, Howie Klein is touting as the perfect running mate for Bernie Sanders. Yes. Bernie hasn't officially jumped into the race yet, but others have. All right. Let me see if there's anything else that I wanted to share with you. I'm a bit discombobulated right now, as you can probably tell. But the good news is we've got Digby with us today. So we'll take a quick break. We'll check in with Brad and Desi, get the latest Green News report, and back with Digby next.
59 below zero in Grand Forks, North Dakota, 41 below in Minneapolis, and 48 below in Chicago.
Record extreme cold shuts down parts of the U.S., and it still doesn't disprove climate change.
It'll make a big difference to the United States economically.
Trump administration seems to concede Venezuela intervention is all about oil, plus Germany sets path to completely quit coal.
Quitters. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Pros and cons of the return of the polar vortex. Pro, going outside in a t-shirt and earning the respect of your peers. Con, getting a high five and having your hand snap off. There you go.
Oh, I hate when that happens. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as we predicted on the last Green News Report, it would be redonkulously cold across much of the Midwest and Northeast. It turned out to be true, but hey, it's getting warmer.
Yes, parts of the U.S. Midwest were colder than even parts of Antarctica, Alaska, and Mount Everest this week.
Oh, my God.
Amid the latest breakdown of the polar vortex, when a wobbly, weakened jet stream spills extremely cold temperatures out of the Arctic. This round has shattered numerous daily and even some all-time low temperature records in the United States. Some states were forced to close offices and schools, warning of, quote, almost instant frostbite for anyone outside in the record cold, which has contributed to the deaths of at least 8 people as of airtime. Even the U.S. Post Office canceled mail delivery in 10 states to protect postal workers. But you better get used to these extreme swings, because this breakdown in the polar vortex, with warmer air pushing into the Arctic and displacing cold air into lower latitudes, has been occurring more frequently over the last 30 years. That's according to meteorologist Guy Walton in an interview on the broadcast.
What we're having right now, as far as global warming goes, is we're having a lot of warmth from the subtropics moving northward over the polar areas, where prior to, say, the 1970s, we hadn't been seeing that as much.
I wonder what changed.
And like clockwork, President Trump and his supporters responded with their usual nonsense, denying the scientific consensus on man-made global warming because of this outbreak of extreme cold in just a part of the U.S.
It's colder in Minnesota right now than it is at the North Pole.
Yeah, it's craziness.
Yes, it's craziness. Isn't it, Fox News? Isn't it wonderful when it turns cold?
Idiots.
But at least one federal agency pushed back against the deniers this week without specifically referring to Trump. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, posted to Twitter a child's cartoon explaining how even intense winter extremes are amplified by global warming.
The folks on Fox News, however, were unable to read it.
Of course, a few days of extreme cold in the United States does not change the documented fact that winters globally have gotten warmer on average over the last 30 years in the U.S. and everywhere, bringing with it new problems for water supplies, agriculture, economies reliant on winter tourism, and more.
It's craziness.
Meanwhile, in politics, the Trump administration's push for regime change in Venezuela to force President Nicolas Maduro out of power may actually be about getting at Venezuela's oil.
You think?
Democracy Now! Highlighted a comment by Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, this week on the Fox Business Channel, in which Bolton stated that the administration's intervention, including new sanctions against Venezuela's oil industry, could actually benefit American oil companies.
It'll make a big difference to the United States economically if we could have American oil companies really invest in and produce the oil capabilities in Venezuela.
If only we could control all of the oil over all of the globe, all of the time. I don't know where these other countries get the idea that that oil should belong to them.
And for those too young to remember, John Bolton was a key architect of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, which resulted in American oil companies running Iraq's oil industry.
I'd be careful if I were you, Iran.
Finally, Germany is quitting coal. A national commission backed by the German government has committed the nation to shutting down all 84 of its coal-fired power plants within 20 years, part of a strategy to accelerate the country's shift to renewable energy and reduce its emissions 60% by 2030. Renewable energy is the leading source of electricity in Germany right now, but coal still supplies about 40%. Coal plant operators agreed to close nearly half of their coal plants in just 3 years, with a total phase out by 2038. And the plan calls for a $45 billion transition fund to assist coal-dependent regions with the changes.
Nice. They're going to have to do it sooner than 20 years, I'm afraid.
Yes.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Changes. Turn and face the strange. Changes.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
And we can only get away with that intro because Digby sort of needs no introduction. You find her at digbysblog.blogspot.com, of course, also at salon.com. Hey, Digby.
Hey, Nicole.
Happy Friday.
Yes, God knows I need one right now.
You and me both. It seems like, God, each week feels like it's months long. some of us are having an easier time getting through the week than others. I've been melting down of late. I have a hard time getting through a typical news cycle these days. And I was, you know, after last night's New York Times interview broke, I saw some commentary somewhere. I wish I would have saved it, but it rang true for me. The problem is with the New York Times going in and having a sit down interview in the Oval Office is they're normalizing this man who says things that are so outlandish and so out of the mainstream. Not only mainstream, just they have no business being in the United States government. We're in a weird, bad episode of the Twilight Zone.
Well, look, he's you know, not all there.
No,
I you know,
not.
And I'm being kind when I say that. I mean, and that interview was just another example of just how nuts he really is. And this was on the heels of a whole day's worth of nutty commentary coming from the President of the United States, both on his Twitter feed and in, you know, a couple of different television appearances, you know, those sort of photo op press, semi-press conferences that he gives, and then this interview with the New York Times. And I agree with you completely that they're normalizing it, and even more than that, I think they literally mischaracterized it. I mean, I happened to be watching CNN when the story broke, when they first put it up online, and Maggie Haberman was on with Chris Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
And she came on there, and the way she characterized that, it didn't sound crazy. It really didn't. And in fact, when I went and read it, and then we got to actually hear the audio of the interview, or at least pieces of it, it was clear that she mischaracterized it. I mean, for instance, here's the thing that there were many things in that interview that were nuts. But this one I thought was very telling. She's the one who specifically asked the question, did you tell Roger Stone to contact WikiLeaks? Pretty straightforward question. Good one, considering where we're at and
right.
Roger Stone just being indicted and everything. And the way he answered it was, no, I didn't. And, you know, she said, so you never told him to? No, I never did. And it instantly took me back to that moment on Air Force One when they asked Trump whether or not he'd ever paid off Stormy Daniels. And whether he knew about the payoff to Stormy Daniels. No, I didn't know.
Yeah, and it's the same kind of...
I have to ask my lawyer, Michael Cohen. I didn't know.
Right, and it's that same kind of almost low-key denial. Oh, no,
yeah.
No, I didn't. That is a
kind
tell
of a
for
breezy,
him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a breezy sort of, oh, no. I mean, to me, this immediately sounds to me like a five-year-old with chocolate smeared all around his mouth. And they say, did you eat the candy? And he said, no, I didn't. Why do you say that?
Right.
You know, what is this candy you speak of? You know, and it's like, you know, it is a tell. You know, Trump is full of them. He's got all kinds of them. But this is a very specific one.
Yes, it is.
In which he gets caught. He is caught having these illegal conversations and doing illegal acts with his fixer guys, you know, with his dirty trickster fixer, goombas that he has in his entourage, Stone and Cohen. And it's clear to me that that's what happened. Now, getting back to the original, you know, statement, Haberman says he was very adamant about the fact that he didn't do it. He was very clear, very straightforward. You know, he didn't mince words, you know, or something like that. And I'm going, and at first I thought, wow, you know, he's really coming down hard. And then I go, and then when I read it, that was my first clue. I'm going, oh, okay. But when I heard it, it was obvious what he was doing. And
yeah.
It's clear. And that whole section in that interview about him with the Trump Tower Moscow stuff and Don Jr. and Roger Stone and all that, it's clear from the tone of his voice that, A, he's very concerned, and B, he's lying like a rug. And you know, and it goes beyond that. They asked him, have you been told if you're a target of the investigation? He goes, no. Rod Rosenstein assured me that I wasn't a subject, I mean target, or I guess he didn't say, I mean subject, target, which clearly means that they've told him he's not a target.
Uh-huh.
And what all that means is that Robert Mueller is going by the Department of Justice book in the idea that you can't indict a sitting president. That doesn't mean he isn't really a target. It just means that they're not considering him one for the purposes of actually indicting him. But of course he's a subject. We know he's a subject.
Right.
I mean, But
on top of that, the fact that they will take any answer he gives and sort of accept it as fact, as you would most presidents, and I'm sure most other presidents have probably lied too, but nothing on the magnitude of what we see with this man. He is a sick fuck. It's the only way I can describe him.
Right? I couldn't have said it better myself. Exactly what he is. I'm being kind. Well, he's not all there. You know, right. No, he's a sick fuck.
He really is.
There's no doubt about it.
And I keep waiting for a journalist to say, excuse me, sir, that's just not true. For instance, this afternoon in the Oval Office, now I have to admit I didn't watch it. I've been dealing with my own... I had a meltdown yesterday. I've been fighting depression, and this guy in the White House is not helping matters much. So I turned it off. But I read what he said, and I listened to some of the clips. And when he says we're already building the wall, in fact, the chant should be changed to finish the wall. Why didn't any of those reporters, and I know the answer, call him out and say, sir, that's just not true? Because they'll lose access, and this comes on a day when, let me read to you this tweet. This on top of about 1,000 journalists already losing their jobs this week. McClatchy and Gannett newspaper chains, New Media, BuzzFeed, HuffPo, Vice, and this is in a good economy. And that's after 45% of all journalist jobs disappeared in the last decades. So many people. Today we're here, and McClatchy is the owner of the Miami Herald and Miami New Times is offering buyouts to like 45% of their staff. We saw all these firings in journalism, and this is supposedly a good economy. And I dare anyone to tell me that Donald Trump doesn't have anything to do with this in his coloring the media as fake news.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, we could do hours on what's happened to the to the media in this country and how it's been, you know, degraded from a number of different directions. And of course, the financial model, as you and I both know, is, you know, really wildly difficult to navigate at this point. But of course, that's having an effect. And interestingly, going back to that New York Times interview, they asked him about this. Don't you think that your, constant, demeaning of the media and calling it fake news and enemy of the people is causing people to no longer have any, sort of trust in the media and creating a crisis and actually putting journalists in danger. And he goes, no, why do you say that? Is it worse than it ever was? And it's kind of like, are you kidding? But of course, look, this guy is living in, all presidents are in a bubble to a certain degree, but most of them read.
Yes.
And they read books and they read briefing papers and they read, newspapers and, they get a fairly decent, even somebody like George W. Bush, I don't know how much he actually read, but, I never got the sense that he was completely living in an alternate universe. And
right.
The one thing I do know is that none of them, except for Trump, spend all day watching television. This is new. We've never had a president who sat there. In fact, they talk about this all the time. We should talk about this, too, the couple of books that came out this week, is that he sits there all day long with one eye on the TV. He's got a big screen TV. I guess it's sort of off the Oval Office, and it's always on.
Right.
It's usually tuned to Fox. And he watches the Chiron, and he even is reported in one of the books, I think it's the Cliff Sims book, that he got up and walked out of a meeting with Paul Ryan and, wandered in while Ryan's talking because I think it was about healthcare. And he's just so bored with what Ryan's talking about, which, I kind of get, but still, he's the president. And he gets up and walks into this other room to watch TV, and Mike Pence had to go and kind of bring him back. Like,
right.
Okay, come on.
And not a word
come
was
on,
said
boy,
about
time
it.
Time to come back.
Right, just like Rain Man. It's Wapner
or Chauncey
time.
Gardner.
It's time for Wapner. Yes, Chauncey Gardner, I love to watch. Except Chauncey Gardner had a lot more common sense than Donald Trump has.
Exactly. And he was kind of a sweet guy.
He wasn't
this malevolent, horror show that's just sort of a walking id.
Right. And if you don't know what we're talking about with Chauncey Gardner, it's Being There. It's a brilliant book by Jerzy Kosinski, but it's one of my favorite movies of all time with Peter Sellers and Shirley MacLaine. And find it on one of the streaming services this weekend and watch it. I can never watch that movie enough. It's just such a brilliant, and especially
now. It's such a great commentary on the times. You know, the thing about Trump, I guess I, in the back of my mind, I always thought, well, at least there are some reasonable people in Congress. Congress will do its job and put checks and balances, and it's going to work out the way it's supposed to. But this Republican Party is so chicken shit, so I don't understand it. I mean, I think some of them have to have brains, but you know, your piece today, we're speaking with Heather Digby Parton, your piece that went up at salon.com today, A New Low for Lindsey Graham, How a Maverick Turned Trump Sycophant. This is the bigot. Not that I ever had great respect for Lindsey Graham. I always thought him to be kind of a wuss, but this, I just picture John McCain rolling over in his grave, because you think that, you know, the two of them best buds, we're going to put up some kind of a resistance to the insanity that would be a Trump presidency. And Lindsey Graham is now his BFF and his enabler.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a very interesting, I mean, I talked about Graham today, not because, you know, he's just doing what he does, what he's been doing for some months. But, and I only brought it up today because I think he's a very interesting sort of symbol or example, I guess, of the thinking that a lot of these people have. Now, in Graham's case, this comes from pure ego. I mean, clearly, you know, McCain during the campaign were very hostile to Trump, and one would have expected them to be sort of never Trump, and I suspect maybe McCain would have been. He would not have been Lindsey Graham, let's put it that way, and not
That's true.
I think McCain's that great, but it just doesn't strike me as being something that his temperament would have allowed him to, you know, lick the boots of a Donald Trump. I just can't see that. But Graham, you know, they were planning what in this one profile that was done on in New York Magazine a couple months ago about Graham, that he and McCain were plotting a, you know, Republican resistance to Trump from within the caucus, the Republican caucus in the Congress. And McCain got sick, and sort of at that point, you know, he kind of fell out, and Graham evidently circling for how he was going to position himself without McCain, you know, on his own, the friends of Trump sort of decided to invite him over to have lunch with Trump and see if they could, you know, mend their fences. And Graham had two reactions to that. First of all, he liked the, quote, bro talk, which just cracks me up.
Because he's a manly man.
And the golfing. And the two of them supposedly hit it off on that basis. Oy. But the other part of it was a very cynical calculation. What Graham thought, discovered, and he's not the only one. Kim Jong-un discovered it. So did Xi Jinping, the premier of China. That if you flatter Trump, that, you know, that gives you an in. You get his ear.
That's
if you're
it.
Out there in
That's
public
takes.
Praising him, just like, you know, dear leader in North Korea. So he decided that he could have more clout from the inside. But of course, by flattering him in public and then talking to him privately. And this person that said this, that was aware of his thinking on this, said, you know, that way he could move mountains. Well, I haven't seen any mountains being moved, frankly.
No.
But nonetheless, it seems to be the strategy that Graham employed. And what he's realized, though, is that in order to keep his, you know, quote, maverick reputation, even a tiny bit of it left, he once in a while has to criticize Trump, and that's very dangerous because Trump does not stand for that. If you criticize him in public, you've got a problem, which is why he loves Kellyanne Conway and others who, whatever they do in private is one thing, but she never goes on television and does anything but praise the dear leader, and that's what he expects. So Graham has found a new way to keep Trump's ear, and what he's decided is that in his position as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, that he is going to be a vicious partisan attack dog. And Trump likes that almost as much as he likes praise. So what we're seeing is, you saw it in the Kavanaugh hearings, the feral animal that Lindsey Graham became. He's going to be investigating Hillary Clinton's emails, and now this thing about going after the FBI around Roger Stone's, you know, the Roger Stone you know, arrest the other morning, and going after the FBI on the FISA warrants and all this other Devin Nunes nonsense that's been going on. This is going to be Graham's thing. So, you know, they found their ways to keep Trump happy. And I have to ask you, and I would love to know what you think. Is he, I mean, do they honestly believe that this is a smart political strategy to tie themselves to Donald Trump? I mean, do they think that he's really going to win? What evidence do they have that Trump is really winning big and that somehow or another their jobs, their futures, their reputations, their legacies are going to benefit from doing what they're doing with Donald Trump? Or do they just think it'll all be forgotten if Trump is defeated somehow?
I have no idea. I can't figure any of this out. Look, I've never been a Lindsey Graham fan, but I never thought he was stupid. Now I really think he's stupid, right? He's just showing himself to be a sycophant, just like a fanboy who's like, ooh, I'm sidling up to the president. He's my BFF. I don't get it. The other thing, there in your last piece, dealt with what I think was the most both illuminating and perplexing moment of the week, which was after the intel chiefs, DNI Dan Coats and the rest of them, testified on Tuesday, contradicting all of Donald Trump's foreign policy assertions, delivered this 42-page report of the global threats faced by the United States. And Donald Trump has the same take on it as he did with the report on climate change and everything else. I don't believe it. And then when asked about it by the reporters, he says, oh, they told me that they were misquoted. They were misrepresented in the media and it was fake news. Bullshit. It was carried live. We all saw it. This is gaslighting at its core. And why any reporter wouldn't stand up and call bullshit on that. I know they don't want to lose access and they don't want to lose their jobs. But there comes a time when integrity takes over, doesn't there?
Well, just the reality. That's the same thing as he did today with saying, well, the wall is being built, you know, I've signed contracts,
right.
And it's being built, and we've built miles of it, and it's really great, and it's working.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It looks really a lot better than the old ones did, you know, and you're going, what in the hell is going on here? And they didn't even, they just kind of, okay, well, I guess we've got a wall. In a weird way, I kind of don't mind that one, just simply because I think we're at a point where Trump's just going to say, I've built a wall, and all his people will believe it, and we'll go, okay, beautiful, good work there, you know?
Yeah.
maybe it's just that easy, but you're right. I mean, this is just this, it's beyond gaslighting. It's just living in it's bizarro world, right? I mean, it's just this alternate universe where he's speaking to a bunch of people who apparently are completely deluded. And if you watch Fox, which I unfortunately do have to do from time to time, that's what you hear. Like, for instance, the intelligence community thing. You know, Fox really did have the Trump line on that. They were basically saying that there was no problem, that the intelligence chiefs, were backed Trump. And backed all of his foreign policy. And I heard other people too saying, well, you know, the intelligence chiefs, they've been wrong in the past. And I'm going, okay, I admit that. They have certainly been wrong in the past. But if I have to choose between believing those people and trusting Donald Trump's gut, which is where what he's using.
That's it. And
as
Fox.
I'm good. You know, I wish I, had an omnipotent resource to turn to here that I know for a fact is always right. That would be great. But considering these are my choices, I'm going to go with the intelligence community on what they're assessing.
Right.
And, you know, this is just, this is the kind of crazy stuff, and it's getting worse and worse. I mean, do you feel that? I mean, I know you said that you're having some, your own feelings
horrible.
Of kind of depression, and I've been having anxiety attacks like crazy lately. And
well,
just
that's, I almost called and canceled on you. I mean, I took one day off this week. I had a meltdown yesterday. I've been battling with this, and but I'm like, all right, I got Digby today. We're going to do a show. And about 2 hours ago, all of a sudden, I broke into a cold sweat, couldn't get my breath, felt like I was going to puke. It was a physical manifestation. It gets to be too much, and it, you know, it's other stuff too. It's my life situation, but it's this situation. And now, as the 2020 election is heating up, and people are throwing their hats in the ring, the vitriol, the ugliness on the left is really getting to me already.
I know
the Bernie Hillary divide still hasn't stopped. Enough already. Oh my God. Just the you know, Kamala Harris may not be your choice candidate, but you know, you should see some of the ugly memes I got about her
I get it too.
And
they're
we're all
walking on eggshells on this stuff. It's ridiculous.
They're not even from Republicans. They're from so-called progressives who should know better.
Or they're Russians.
Right.
I mean, I don't know which is which at this point. And all of that is very anxiety-provoking to me because, you know, it makes you very, like I said, we're walking on eggshells. I mean, this is very, very difficult. And I'm not saying that that isn't coming from members of the left. Of course it is. I mean, some of these people are people I know personally.
Me too.
So I know that it does come from the left. But, you know, I mean, and I'm with you on this. I'm going, you know, can we just wait a second here and let this thing unfold a little bit and let the people who are running, you know, come out, make their case? I mean, we do not have to get crazy.
No.
2 years. Out. I mean, let's just, you know, calm down, everybody.
Primary season is supposed to be when it's fun. You get to hear all these great ideas, and the more the merrier, and get them all on that debate stage so we can hear about, you know, how we're going to make this a better place. And we take, hopefully, the best of those ideas, and we, you know, and we nominate the candidate who has the best ideas if the DNC doesn't fuck us over again. But let it unfold. Attack Donald Trump. There's plenty there to attack.
God knows.
You know,
Howard Schultz. Let's attack him. I love attacking Howard Schultz.
Oh, my God. But leave Kamala Harris. Look, I'm not a fan of Kirsten Gillibrand either. But, you know, let her get her campaign started. She'll be one of the first ones out, probably. But let it unfold organically without us sort of digging the grave for whoever the Democratic nominee winds up being.
And, you know, presidential politics, it takes a specific skill, and you don't really see how well people are going to do until you see them on the big stage. I mean, you have to let that happen. It's not the same thing as running for office for other offices or doing other, you know, forms of politics. It's certainly not the same thing as activism, which is, you know, you have a much smaller sort of, you know, group that you're trying to appeal to. And, you know, the presidential politics is a big country. It's full of a lot of people with a lot of different ideas, and we, you know, the way our system is set up, it's a two-party system. Whether we like it or not, that's the way it is, unless we change the rules. So, you know, within these two coalitions, you've got to find somebody who can successfully, you know, appeal to a broad enough group of people to win in this large, you know, very polarized, volatile polity that we have right now. So I think everybody needs to relax and remember that, you know, we have an enemy. If Donald Trump wins election in 2020, and, you know, everybody, I think we're in grave danger of being complacent about that again.
That's right.
And, you know, well, hey, look what he's done. I'm going, yeah, and he is, you know, has the same number of people that back him today that backed him the day he was elected. So don't think that any of this has made a difference to them, because it hasn't. So, you know, this is a different situation. Now, I'm not saying I'm not optimistic. Obviously, I am. 2018 was a great, you know, trial run here to see if we can get him out. But and we don't know everything yet either.
Nope.
I mean, there's a lot of investigating. There's a lot of stuff happening. But, you know, this guy is going to be running unless, you know, something happens. He's going to be running for office. And if he gets reelected, I honestly think we're sunk. And I'm sorry to sort of feed into your depression and my anxiety here. But that is the thing I wake up in the middle of the night kind of in a cold sweat over.
You and me
what
both.
What happens if this guy is validated? It cannot happen. And, you know, I have my preferences for policy and for politics. I definitely have, you know, people that I already am, you know, viewing very favorably, and others that I have resistance, you know.
Yep.
I hope the right person makes it, and the person that makes it is the one who can build a big enough majority that they can win over Trump and the vote suppressors and the Russians and
Absolutely.
God knows who else are going to be cheating on their side this time, a big enough one to overcome that. And that means that we have to be very real and very practical and just keep our eyes on the prize. You know, I mean, there are times when you are in a situation that is so grave and, you know, is such a huge, you know, danger, literally, that, you know, you've got to just kind of, you know, buckle down and do what you have to do to win. So, you know, hopefully we don't kill ourselves, kill each other in the process.
Yeah. We got to remember we're on the same team and keep our eye on the prize, exactly. which is getting rid of Donald Trump. Digby, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Oh, so
what
are
a great
you, Nicole.
Way to
hey, feel better. Enjoy
week.
Your weekend.
Thank you,
you know,
so much.
Relax. Take a hot bath.
Yes, I will try. Thank you.
All right.
Digby,
talk
everybody.
To you later.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And with that, we are done for the day and for the week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with me yesterday. And onward. See you next time. Bye, everyone.